Okay, let us begin. So today we're learning Parashas Maaseh, the second of the double parasha this week. Perek Lamed Daled, chapter 34, the second pasuk, but obviously we'll do the first pasuk just because it leads in. The first pasuk is the classic, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe. So at this particular point in time, what we're going to be reading about is the introduction to the boundaries of Israel. This is the section in the Torah where it defines what the borders of Israel are. So the introduction is the pasuk we're going to look at, the second pasuk of this perek. Tzaves b'nei Yisrael, so Hashem tells Moshe, instruct the Jewish people, v'amarta aleihem, and say to them, ki atem boim el ha'aretz Kanaan, when you come into the land of Canaan, Zois ha'aretz, that is the land, or this is the land, ashitipoil lochem benachala, that will fall for you as an inheritance, eretz Canaan ligvuloi seha, the land of Canaan defined by its borders. So basically, you can expect that what's going to happen next, as it does, it will then define the borders. This is the northern border, the eastern border, the southern border, the western border. And that's it. It's telling us this is it. This is just shortly before the Jews are going to cross the Jordan River and they're going to conquer the land of Israel. So they need to know what constitutes the land of Israel. So look at Rashi. We're going to see two Rashis on this pasuk. Rashi number one, Zois ha'aretz ashitipoil lochem v'goymer. Rashi takes the words out of the pasuk. He says, this is the land ashitipoil lochem that will fall before you, v'goymer, etc. Says Rashi, why do we have to know this? Why do we have to have this introduction that tells us this is the land according to its boundaries? Why do we need that introduction? Says Rashi, lefi shehar bei mitzvahs noyagos ba'aretz, because there are many mitzvahs that can only be done in the land. Ve'ein noyagos b'chutz la'aretz, and these mitzvahs are not fulfilled outside of the land. Therefore, hutzrech lichtoiv matzrone gvuloi ruchoise hasaviv. Therefore, the Torah had to define the different parameters of the boundaries of the land all around it, in other words, from all angles. Loim alocha, to tell you, min hagvulim alolu v'lifnim ha-mitzvois noyagos, that from these boundaries inwards, that's where you have to fulfill these mitzvahs. Okay, that's what Rashi says. Now, if you had not read Rashi, and you had just looked in the historical context of what's happening over here, which is that this is just shortly before the Jews are going to, Moshe is going to pass away, Yehoshua is going to take over, the Jews are going to cross over into Israel, and then they will begin the business of conquering the land. So, on the face of it, you would have expected that the reason we're being told the borders is so you know what land you have to conquer. Isn't that obvious? Isn't that the most logical pshat? Remember that Rashi only tackles the pshat, what's the most obvious and easy level of understanding of the story. So pshat, the simplest level to understand the story is you're about to go conquer the land. This constitutes the land. Don't go conquer further north. Don't go conquer further south. This is the land. Why does Rashi not explain it that way? Why does Rashi not follow what would seem to be the most obvious translation, that it's just telling us what the boundaries are so that we know what to do? Instead, he goes into a whole discussion around the mitzvahs that you're going to do in the land. Question one. Say that again. Very interesting point that you're saying, and that's not going to answer our question, and you'll see why. So you're saying that already in last week's parasha they spoke about how you split up the land between the tribes, so surely we already know the borders, but we're going to see very clearly over here that that is not the case, and that is not the explanation of why he over here suddenly starts to tell us about the borders. So at the face on the face of it so far, it seems strange that Rashi is dafka relating this to the story of mitzvahs instead of just saying simply that this is the issue of knowing what to conquer. That's question one. Question two. Why does Rashi say it in such a drawn out way? Look what he says. He says, because there are mitzvahs that are done in Israel, and those mitzvahs are not done out of Israel. Why do you have to tell me that? That's self-explanatory. Obviously, if there are mitzvahs that can only be done in Israel, then I know that those mitzvahs are not done outside of Israel. Why does he have to say it in such a lengthy way? Then he says, therefore we were told what the borders are. And then he says it again, so that you'll know that within these borders, you do those mitzvahs that are only for in Israel. He could have saved a lot of time and a lot of ink. Rashi could have just said as follows, because there are mitzvahs that are only done in Israel, it told us the borders of Israel. And that's it. Now, we know that Rashi weighs every word, and we know that Rashi doesn't just say things because he wants to be poetic or to be thorough. So if Rashi has deliberately said there are mitzvahs done in Israel, and those mitzvahs are not done outside of Israel, well, there's got to be a very good reason for that, and we need to understand the reason. Question number three is, if the whole thrust of Rashi's commentary is based on the borders, because he wants to say only within these borders you fulfill these mitzvahs, why does he not include the key word, ligvuloi seha, which is in the pasuk, the word about borders, why does he not include that in his headline? All he does is he hints at it by saying vegoimer, etc. Surely that's the key word. The key word is we want to know the borders. Why do we want to know the borders? Because according to Rashi, we need to know where you do the mitzvahs that are noihagois ba'aretz, that are only done in Israel. So why not say that word? Okay, so three questions over here on Rashi. Why does he not just say simply, we need to know the borders to know what to conquer? Why does he do such a lengthy explanation of something that surely could have been said in a succinct fashion? And why does he not include the key word, ligvuloi seha, about the borders in his headline? Let's now look at the next Rashi, immediately afterwards. Okay, so he says, Zois Aretz Asher Tipoil, and then he goes back to those words, Tipoil Lochem, and Rashi explains those two words, Tipoil Lochem, that the land will fall before you, says Rashi, Tipoil Lochem. Why does it say Tipoil? Why does it say fall? Such a strange way to talk. The land's going to fall? Why do I say fall? This is the land that is split between you. This is the land that you will inherit. This is the land that will come to you. I don't know, there are so many different expressions that could have been used. So Rashi is perplexed by the language, tipoil. This is the land that will fall before you, says Rashi. Al shame. Why is it called tipoil? Al shame sheniskalko begoyrol. Because the land was divided using a goyrol, using a lottery system, nikras chalukah l'shoin nefila. You can express this division based on a lottery. You can express it as falling. So this lot fell to you, and that lot fell to him, and the next lot fell to them. So Rashi says that that's got to be the reason why the word over here is tipoil, because tipoil means, you know, it fell into your lot. But he's apparently not satisfied with that, because he now brings a second explanation. Says Rashi further, O Medrash Agada Oimer, the Medrash Agada. Now remember that Rashi's goal is always pshat, the simplest explanation. If Rashi is going to use a Medrash, there must be a compelling reason why to use a Medrash. So he says, O Medrash Agada Oimer, the Medrash says, listen to this, tell me if this sounds anywhere close to pshat. Says the Medrash, Al yedei shehipil HaKadosh Baruch Hu soreyem shel ayin umois min hashamayim v'kofson lifnei Moshe. What happened? Hashem took the 70 ministering angels. Every nation on earth has an angel that is called its sar, its, so to speak, spiritual officer on high. So Hashem took all of the sarim, all of the ministering angels of the 70 nations, and brought them down and subdued them in front of Moshe. And Hashem said to Moshe, look, you'll see that the Sarim no longer have any power, as if to say, don't be afraid of going to conquer the land of Israel, because the Sarim of all of the nations have been disempowered. So certainly the Sarim of the nations of Canaan have been disempowered. You have nothing to worry about. You can go and take the land. Okay? So two explanations Rashi gives for the word tipoil, which implies falling. One is that it somehow relates to the expression of a lottery. Something falls into your lap. This is your lot. Or alternatively, the Medrash that says that all the major spiritual entities that are responsible for the nations of the world fell in front of Moshe's feet, and he was able, so to speak, to subdue them. So two questions on that. Question number one. Goyrel. Goyrel, that's how you explain the word to fall. Just say simply, Tipoilache means the land will fall into your hands. In other words, it's an assurance that they're going to succeed, that they will be victorious. Why does Rashi have to relate it to the Goyrel, which is a lottery system? Yes, it was discussed in the previous parasha. But still, that is quite a stretch to suggest that a Goyrel is the reason for the language to fall. It would be much closer to Pshat to say that what he's telling them is, don't be afraid, you will be successful, those nations are going to literally fall into your hands. Why does Rashi avoid that, which seems to be closer to Pshat, and instead related to the Goyrel, which, as we're still going to see, does not seem to be so close to Pshat? Also, why bring this Medrash? Why bring this Medrash? You know, we do know that anytime Rashi brings a second explanation, it's because there's something about the first explanation that he's not entirely satisfied with. So we've first got to work out what is he not entirely satisfied with in the first explanation. But then the Medrash that he brings seems to be the furthest thing from Pshat. Sarim that were brought down from heaven and subdued in front of Moshe is classic Midrash, and not in any way what we would relate to Pshat. Why is Rashi bringing it? If he felt that there was something lacking in the first explanation, surely it could have been resolved with another commentary that is closer to the simple understanding of the Pasuk. Why bring a Medrash? Okay, so all in all, we have five questions on these two Rashis. So let's understand what's going on over here. Let's have a look back in the Pasuk. Let's read the Pasuk again. What is the goal of this Pasuk at Pshat level, face value? The goal is that we're about to talk about the boundaries, the borders of Israel. And so if, in fact, what's going to happen is that they need to know what areas to conquer, then the Pasuk seems convoluted. Let's go back. Tzavos b'nei Yisrael v'amart alehem. Instruct the Jewish people and tell them, Ki atem boim el ha'aretz Canaan, when you come to the land of Canaan. Okay, so far so good. We understand what's going on. It's telling the Jewish people what's about to happen. You'll go into the land of Canaan. All good. Zois ha'aretz asher tipoil lochem benachala. This is the land that will fall into your hands as an inheritance. This is what bothers Rashi. Those words, that's why he doesn't put the word Ligvuloi Seha into the headline, because Ligvuloi Seha is not the key thing that bothers him. He alludes to it with a Vagoima, with an etc., because it's part of the conversation, but it's not what bothers him. What bothers him is the protracted language. Zois ha'aretz asher tipoil lochem benachala. You know what the Torah could have said? Zois nachlaschem. This will be your inheritance. Because he just said, you're going to come to Haaretz Canaan. He tells us where we're talking about, the land of Canaan. So he doesn't have to reiterate that because the Torah has already said it. So it should have said, Zois nachlaschem. This will be your inheritance. Rashi is perturbed by the fact that it says, Zois Haaretz asher tipoil lochem benachala. Says Rashi, if the intention of this pasuk was simply to tell us the following area is the area that you may conquer, then it would have said a simple expression, Zois, the following area, Nachlaschem, is your inheritance. The fact that the Torah added the expression, Asher Tipoil Lochem, makes Rashi believe that there's something else being said over here. The Torah is not just talking about conquest. The Torah is talking about something specific, and that specific thing is alluded to in those words, Tipol Lachem. So we need to explore those words, Tipol Lachem, to understand what's going on over here. Number two, in last week's parasha, you'll recall that Hashem told Moshe he's not going into Eretz Yisrael. Even though Moshe thought that maybe once he was taught the laws of inheritance and told to share those laws with the Jewish people, maybe Hashem had forgiven him and maybe he would go back into the land. So Hashem assures him that I'm standing by my word and you're not going in. Instead, Moshe says to Hashem, therefore we need to pick a successor. So Hashem tells him clearly, Yehoshua is going to be the successor and he's the person who's going to conquer the land. So if this pasuk, this is the second thing that bothers Rashi. If this pasuk is to tell us about the conquest of the land, then the pasuk should have gone, Tzav es Yehoshua. Instruct Yehoshua, because it's his job to look after the conquest and to lead the conquest of Israel. It doesn't say that. It says, Tzav es Bnei Yisrael. So that also perturbs Rashi. Why, if we're talking about just conquering the land, which is the mandate of Yehoshua, why is this something Moshe is supposed to tell the whole Jewish people? Must be, says Rashi, when you put two of them together, you put together the lengthy expression of the pasuk, plus you put together the fact that the pasuk is addressed to the Jewish nation, not only to Yehoshua. From that, Rashi concludes that actually it's not talking about the conquest, it's talking about something that would happen post-conquest, in addition to the conquest. What would that be? Well, let's think. Whenever the Torah tells us that Moshe is supposed to speak to Bnei Yisrael, what is that usually an indication of? Tell them mitzvahs. That's what happens. Consistently, for 40 years, we've seen this, that whenever Hashem wants to convey mitzvahs to the Jewish people, he says to Moshe, Tzav es Bnei Yisrael. So therefore, Rashi says, I see in this pasuk, Tzav es Bnei Yisrael, and I see this so-called convoluted way of expressing the what the borders are for, why I need to know the borders. He says, I put two and two together, and I understand that what it's telling us over here is relevant to the mitzvahs that they would do in Israel. Okay, so therefore Rashi should have told us, as we originally asked, he should have told us clearly and simply, mitzvahs noya goyis ba'aretz, there are certain mitzvahs that can only be done in Israel, and therefore we need to know what constitutes Israel. So we've resolved why it is that we have that, why we don't have the word Gvulo Yisrael in the headline. We've resolved why Rashi doesn't think that this is just telling us what area to conquer because of the language, but we haven't resolved why Rashi goes in such a convoluted way to tell us these mitzvahs are done in Israel and they're not done outside of Israel. Well, obviously they're not done outside of Israel if you've told me they're only done in Israel. At this point in time, we know that when the Jews were going to go into Israel, in addition to the fact that they would inherit the land, there were 2.5 tribes, Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh, who were going to get land on what's called Transjordan, the east bank of the Jordan River. Rashi wants to know, those mitzvahs that are to be fulfilled in Israel, do they apply to the east bank of the Jordan as well? Now, Rashi is not a book of halacha, so he's not telling us what the actual practical application of the law is. Rashi wants to know, according to the pshat, the simplest interpretation of the pasuk, and the pshat does not always have to fit with the practical halacha. So according to the pshat, do those 2.5 tribes, when they live on the east bank of the Jordan River, do they have to observe mitzvahs that are reserved for the land of Israel? Rashi says the pshat would seem that they don't. Why? Because Rashi sees in the wording over here that Hashem is telling Moshe to tell the Jewish people about their conduct, which mitzvahs they should fulfill once they are in Israel. And then it tells us the borders. And those borders exclude Eiver HaYarden. They exclude the east bank of the Jordan. Therefore, Rashi understands that Al Pi Pshat, the simplest version of understanding the Pasuk, is that Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe don't have to keep those mitzvahs in their territories. That's why Rashi tells us, look at the wording, Harbein mitzvos noy hagois ba'aretz. Many mitzvahs can only be fulfilled in the land. In the land meaning the borders that are about to be described. Therefore, he tells us, Ve'ein noy hagois b'chutza la'aretz. Those same laws will not be fulfilled outside of these borders, even in land that has been allocated to the Jewish people as part of their inheritance. That's why he uses the double expression, and that's why he comes back at the end to say, therefore we were told the borders, so that you will know which mitzvahs are fulfilled within those borders. So according to the Pshat, the simplest understanding, whether this be binding in Halacha or not, according to the Pshat, Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe do not fulfill mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz in their territory. They don't fulfill mitzvos that are only in Israel. Fascinating insight, by the way. Okay, so now that Rashi's explained the concept in this way, in other words, he's explained that the purpose of this pasuk is not to define for us what has to be conquered, as in which area, but rather the purpose of this pasuk is to tell us once it is conquered, you will now have new obligations that apply only in that part of the world. So Rashi says, whoa, hang on a second, that raises a very big question. Very big question. Effectively, what you're telling me is that the whole purpose of this pasuk is to tell us how to live a higher life, a life with more mitzvahs, which equates to a life that is elevated, that is more connected to Hashem. If that's the goal and purpose of this pasuk, to tell us where you get to do more mitzvahs, to get to where you have an aliyah, an elevation, why then is the language tipoil? Why do we use an expression that the land will fall into your hands? It should have been the exact opposite. It should have been that the land should be lifted in your hands, right? That should have been the expression, that the land should be lifted into your hands. Like, for example, if you go back all the way to Parashas Chayei Sarah, after Sarah Imenu passes away and Avram has to go and buy a piece of land, the city of Hebron, to bury her, what does it say after he bought the area of Hebron? Vayokem ste Ephron. The area, the field of Ephron, was elevated. Why? Because, as Rashi tells us clearly, it went from an ordinary person to somebody who was a king, somebody who was a great person. There was an elevation of stature for the land itself by virtue of the fact that Avram had bought it. Same thing should happen to Canaan. Canaan is a land that is defined by paganism and promiscuity. When the Jews come in and conquer the land of Canaan, it's elevated. And especially here in this context where we're talking about the fact that Canaan will become Eretz Yisrael, a place where you do more mitzvahs than anywhere else, you should definitely have said, Zoysa Aretz Asher Tokim Lachem. This is the land that you should raise and elevate. That's why Rashi is concerned about the expression Tipoil. Tipoil Lachem. That it will fall into your hands. So the first thing, the most simple pshat-related explanation that he could give for this is, hang on, the word tipol actually works. Why? Because the word tipol, for something to fall into your lap, is an expression that works when you're talking about a lottery. And seeing as they were going to split the land using a lottery, so therefore it works, it fits. It fits, that's the expression. The expression means, it fell into your portion. There's 12 portions. This part fell into your portion. That part fell into your portion. Why is Rashi not satisfied with that explanation? Ostensibly, that deals with the language tipol. So he's not satisfied for two major reasons. Number one, This parasha is not talking about how to divide between the 12 tribes. That was last week's parasha. And they are two totally different subjects. The subject of how you divide the land is not dependent on what the external borders are, actually, because we don't know what each portion is when we're told so-and-so is going to get this portion in the east. Well, we don't know how far it expands until this parasha where we're given the borders. So in last week's parasha, when we spoke about the goyrel, the lottery, and we spoke about the division of the land, we were focused on a completely different idea to what we're focused on here. There we wanted to know what the portions are. Here we want to know what the borders are. It's a completely different conversation, because it is possible that somebody has a border portion and you don't know how far it stretches into the neighboring territory until this parasha. So the focus of this parasha is not the splitting between the 12 tribes. The focus of this parasha is what gets conquered by the Jewish people to constitute Israel. So that's the first reason Rashi's not totally satisfied that we're going to use the word tipoil, which is speaking about conquest, and explain it based on chalukah, the division of the land. Division of the land is one topic. Conquest of the land is a different topic, and the wording does not necessarily have to align. Not only that, Rashi has a bigger issue that is dissatisfied with using this particular explanation. What's the bigger issue? Well, we know that lotteries have been mentioned previously in the Torah. In fact, possibly one of the most famous lotteries in Judaism is the lottery that happened every year on Yom Kippur, as described in Parashas Achrei Mois. And that's the lottery to decide out of two goats, which one is a sacrifice and which one gets tossed off a cliff. The Torah says clearly in that context, in the context of goyrol, the same word that is used here for lottery, it says there, v'hasa'ir asher Allah olav ha-goyrol Hashem. It talks about the lottery that you will lift up. In other words, it is in Torah language common to use a word of lifting when you refer to a lottery. Yes, Rashi says in normal language we might use the word something fell into your lot. You might use that, but Torah uses the word to elevate. So it's a bit of a stretch to say that the Torah usually says the word elevate when referring to a lottery, but here suddenly it uses the word fall when referring to a lottery. Actually, Rashi himself in last week's parasha spoke about how there was the miracle of the goyrel and how they would lift up, and he uses this expression. He says they would pull out the particular piece of paper with the name of a tribe, and then it would pull out another piece of paper with the name of the portion of land, and he says a miracle happened that the piece of paper would announce and say, I am portion X, and I went up to such and such a tribe. In other words, Rashi himself already used the language that the goyrel of land goes up. So for those two reasons, firstly, that the subject of division of the land and the subject of conquest and the borders are not the same subject. Secondly, that in context of a goyrel, the Torah actually uses the expression to elevate rather than the expression to fall. That's why Rashi is not satisfied with this particular commentary and has to find a second one. Now, the second one that he brings is from a medrash. And a medrash obviously is not your first choice if you're trying to explain the pshat, simple understanding of a pasuk. But he needs to explain the word tipol. He needs to explain the word falling. So therefore, Rashi brings the Medrash, which says, Tipol is a massive concept. It's not talking just about the land falling into their hands. It's talking about the entire spiritual structure on which nations found themselves collapsing in front of the Jewish people. This is to tell us the ease with which they would be able to conquer the land. By the way, if you go ahead in the story to the book of Yehoshua, We know that when Yahushua sends spies to Jericho, they come back and they say, everybody's still chattering. They're still shaking in their boots because the Jews are coming. And then later, after they cross the Yarden River, the Tanakh says clearly that their hearts melted. So you see that this is actually going to come to fruition in real terms, and that it's going to be a relatively easy conquest compared to what they had anticipated, certainly compared to what they had been told by the spies all those years before. Why is Rashi not happy then just to bring the Midrash? What's wrong with the Midrash? Well, first of all, the Torah said, Zois ha'aretz ashetipol, that the land will fall into your hands. And the Midrash is saying that the Sorim, the spiritual entities who are responsible for the land, will fall into your hands. So that's why Rashi cannot really be satisfied with that explanation, and that's why he didn't offer it first. Second of all, the word tipoil is a future tense word. The land will fall into your hands. The Medrash tells the story as if it had already happened, that Hashem had already brought the Sorim and subdued them in front of Moshe. For those reasons, Rashi puts the Medrash as his second tier explanation. It's not his ideal explanation. The first explanation is far more comfortable because it's closer to the Pshat and it fits the words better and it talks to the concept of why the land would fall, so to speak, into your lottery. So that's what Rashi prefers as his first answer, and he only brings the Medrash to satisfy those small missing pieces in that first explanation. So what have we learned? We've learned over here that Rashi reads in this parasha that it's not only telling us about how to conquer the land, it's specifically telling us that the purpose of conquering the land is to have a place where you can do extra mitzvahs and thereby have a stronger, more elevated connection to Hashem. He points out that in Pshat, that can only happen within the borders, which are about to be described, not on the east bank of the Jordan River. And he tackles the Lashon Tipoil, that it will fall on two levels. Either it's an expression suited to the manner in which the land was going to be divided. This portion falls into your lot. Or it relates to the story of the Sarim being subdued in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. So what could it teach us? What could the story teach us about ourselves? The story of conquering Eretz Canaan and transforming it into Israel is a summary of the entire purpose of Judaism. Canaan, by the way, elsewhere in Hasidus, we explain that Canaan is actually the real translation of the word Canaan is a merchant. And the idea of a merchant is somebody who is willing to make some investment in order to get a greater return. So Canaan is a land in which you invest in order to get greater return. What does it mean in practical reality? Hashem invests in a neshama. He takes a neshama from a beautiful space, Igra Rama, as it's called, the high roof, a spiritual environment, a pristine environment. And Hashem allows that neshama to come down a Bira Amikta into what is called a deep pit, a place that is spiritually aberrant, a place that is dark, a place that is misguiding, misleading. Why? Canaan, it's an investment. It's an investment in order to be able to achieve. What's the achievement? That we, in that place, should be able to do mitzvahs. Mitzvahs ha'noyagos ba'aretz. Mitzvahs can only be done ba'aretz, on earth. There are no mitzvahs in Shemayim. What do they say in Shemayim? They don't accept checks, they only accept receipts. Right? There's no mitzvahs in Shemayim. That's what Rashi's alluding to over here. Mitzvos hanoyagos ba'aretz. Mitzvos can only be fulfilled on earth. So how does an neshama get to earth? Tipoil. Tipoilochem. Zos ha'aretz asher tipoilochem. This is the land that you get to by falling. You fall into this land. That's how you land up over here. It's a yerida. It's a descent for the neshama to be able to come down into this land. Why is that a worthwhile proposition? Because of mitzvahs hanoyagos ba'aretz. Because that will allow you the opportunity to do mitzvahs. And those mitzvahs will elevate you. So Rashi says, what is the nature of how these mitzvahs will elevate you? What does it actually mean? Because it seems a bit incongruent that you're talking about a process that is intended for elevation, but you call that process tipol. Yeridat Tzorech Aliyah, if you go through a temporary downer in order to afterwards achieve something which is even greater, we focus on the fact that the net result is elevation. So why are you calling it Tipo? Seems the wrong expression. It should have said, Zaysaritz Ashetokim Lochem. This is the land that you will lift yourself. In other words, through engaging in mitzvahs, you will lift yourself. So therefore, says Rashi, Tipoil doesn't mean you will fall. Tipoil means that you will use a methodology called a goyrel. What's a goyrel? So Tipoil identifies as a word that works for goyrel. It's a word that relates to goyrel. What's a goyrel? It's a process that has absolutely no rational explanation. Why did this person get that particular portion? I don't know, it's a goyrel. That was the lottery. It's what you and I would call absolutely random. But in Chassidus, we explain that a goyrel means that you reach a point that is beyond what the rational mind can achieve or create. By the way, that's why there's a goyrel on Yom Kippur. That's why there's a lottery on Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is a day where our connection to Hashem is recognized as being something beyond what makes any sense. What makes sense is we've done wrong and we should be distanced and punished for it. Comes along Yom Kippur and says, no, your relationship to Hashem is actually because of the essence of your neshama. The essence of your neshama makes no sense. It doesn't depend on a rational explanation of why you should or shouldn't be connected to Hashem, or whether or not you should still retain a connection to Hashem. It just is. It's absolute. That's what goyrel represents. Comes along Rashi and says, Tipol doesn't mean that you fall, chas v'shalom. Tipo means that in the course of living in this world, you get in touch with your neshama, and specifically you get in touch with your neshama at its deepest level, the level of neshama that does not wait for things to make sense and does not have to explain itself because it's just absolutely committed to Hashem. That's why Rashi links it to the goyrel over here. Ah, you're going to say, that's all very nice in theory, and I appreciate the fact that I have huge potential, and I know that I'm supposed to do mitzvahs, and the reason Hashem sent my neshama down into this world was in order to achieve all of these things, but boy, are there a lot of obstacles. There's a Yetzer Hara, there might be financial constraints, there's the distractions of this world, there are who knows how many things that get in the way. Who says I'm going to succeed? Who says I'm going to live up to Hashem's expectations of rebounding my neshama back to a place that is even higher than where it started? Therefore, Rashi brings the second explanation, that Hashem takes the sorim of the nations of the world and he subdues them in front of Moshe. Moshe, like the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, is a spark within ourselves. There's Moshe the human who lived as the leader of the Jewish people in history. There's Ispashtusa de Moshe b'chol Dora, as the Zohar says, a Moshe figure in every generation who's the ultimate leader. And as the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, there's the Moshe spark within ourselves that is the part of us that allows us to have absolute connection to Hashem in spite of everything. So what does Hashem do? He takes all of the sorim, all of the spiritual energies that are negative or that interfere with us or that disturb us, and he takes all of them, coughs on, and he subdues them in front of Moshe, in front of our own neshama, and he makes it clear that we should never be afraid of an obstacle, or a yetzer hara, or bad habits, or our history, or whatever else it is that we use to convince ourselves of our inability to conquer the land, of our inability to do the mitzvahs. It's all sorted already before we begin the process. Hashem has subdued our yetzer hara and all the obstacles in front of us. It now only simply remains for us to go ahead and to do what Hashem wants. As it says, Dabro b'nei Yisovi so'u, like it says by the splitting of the sea, speak to the Jewish people and tell them just to keep walking, keep moving, keep growing, and everything else will fall by the wayside. We should, Taka, be successful in doing that, and be zoiche not only to conquer the personal Eretz Yisrael of our own, but as a result of that, to be able to get Eretz Yisrael l'gvulo yiseha, Eretz Yisrael as Hashem had defined it by its borders, which includes in the time of Mashiach, the land of the Keni, Knizi, and Kadmoini, Amon, Moav, and Edom, the expanded version of Eretz Yisrael, that we should be able to be there together with all of the Jewish people, with Mashiach, and it should happen immediately.